This is the one set in the Highlands of Scotland.
With a Victorian werewolf and Queen Victoria.
There are lots of kung fu monks.
For no apparent reason.
We are not amused.
It's called Tooth and Claw.
Here we go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Daleks, Cybers, and Dude, wow!
Tennant, Smith, and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha, and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when? Who Back When.
Hello, and welcome to N016 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast, Tooth and Claw. I'm JD, and today I'm with Pumpkin.
Yes, you are. When am I ever not here, dude? How are you doing?
It's a good question. I'm fine. Merry pre-Christmas, or if this is going out between Christmas and New Year, Happy New Year. This is going out after New Year. Welcome to the misery that's 2015.
I second all of that. Holy crap, we're reviewing yet another not-quite-werewolf thing.
Yes, we did Orlok.
Yes, we did. Oh my god, by the way, a little addendum to our Orlok review. I did not make this connection, but it dawned on me. I just did a random Google. Do you know where the name Orlok comes from? It's from Nosferatu. He is like Count Orlok.
I was unaware of this.
Yeah, so was I. So that means yet another horror franchise was, plopped
ruined
in there. Yeah. Anyway, so we've got another werewolf on our hands in Tooth and Claw.
Possibly.
Possibly. At what point, I'm just going to assume that you didn't like this one, at what point exactly did you realize that this episode is a complete pile of garbage?
Pre-credit sequence.
Ah. Be more specific, please. Does the color orange have anything to do with it?
Yep.
Do slow motions? Yes, okay, excellent. All right, same here. Let's jump into this bad boy. Shall we B-scow it up?
Let's. The Doctor and Rose materialize in Scotland in 1879, where they bump into A, Queen Victoria, B, Scottish kung fu monks, and C, a werewolf, who isn't a werewolf, but might as well be.
Thanks to the marvel of psychic paper, they're invited to join Queen Vicky's entourage, and together they go to, dum-dum-dum, the Torchwood Estate.
However, for some mysterious and completely unreasonable reason, the monks have taken over the place, and there's a howling beast lurking in the basement. You are welcome.
Yeah, aren't you pleased?
We watched this episode so you don't have to.
I think some people like this episode. And I think with the exception of some of these sort of shit tangents, like the kung fu thing, it's actually not that bad an episode.
I think the problem with it is that it's trying to add too many things into the episode. You've got kung fu monks, you've got Queen Victoria, you've got a werewolf, you've got the Koh-i-Noor diamond, you've got the Torchwood Estate.
Yeah, but you know what? Remove the kung fu monks. There you go. Done. Isn't this already a better episode?
Considerably. And make the werewolf a werewolf.
Yeah, exactly. Make the fucking werewolf a werewolf. I was thinking about this, and this is in my notes. How the shit do I pop this into the visual index on the website? Like, we have... Can I post this as a werewolf? I can't, because it's not a werewolf. Will there ever be werewolves? Or will, like, werewolves turn up in the future and they're a different kind of, spoiler alert, alien? It pisses me off that you do these... not you, personally, JD, but that they do these supernatural stories, but they don't let them be supernatural. Like, they add this sci-fi element to it. I like the supernatural elements. Sometimes we do actually get supernatural stuff, and I love that.
Sadly, it's quite rare.
Yeah, that's true.
We end up with stuff like this, or we end up like crap, like Vincent and the Doctor in Matt Smith's era.
Okay.
The episode is superb. It is a wonderful character piece about Vincent van Gogh.
Yeah.
Until the alien turns up for the last 5 minutes.
Oh, I don't even remember the alien.
Yeah, be grateful, right? All right. There is no reason for it to be there. And
I imagine not.
it ruined what would have been a perfectly wonderful historical episode.
Wow.
Because we've already reviewed The Unquiet Dead.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Where we could have had ghosts, but we didn't. We could have had zombies, but we didn't.
Yeah.
And you get this character piece of a cultural, historical figure. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. The parallels are infinite, ladies and gentlemen. Let's jump into this episode instead. Tooth and Claw.
Pre-credit sequence.
Oh, balls.
Yeah, sadly. a group of monks turn up to this house.
Yes, and we don't yet know what the house is called.
And we don't know particularly why this guy has turned up and what the monks are here for. And basically, the guy who runs the house says, you know, you want to come in, and the monks decloak.
Yeah, well, it's like, blah, 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 blah. The monks go, we're gonna just straight up take your house. Like, we are here, your house is now our house.
They decloak and go from miserable brown robes to day-glow orange Tibetan monk robes.
Exactly. They look like freaking Tibetan monks, and they know kung fu. Like, they have crazy sticks. They're like, it's the Matrix now. Because we get this slow motion, completely unnecessary kung fu style montage of them demonstrating their badassdom and doing ridiculous pole vaults over the regular Scotsman.
And what it actually looks like is the BBC One idents at the time, which were also orange people doing kung fu. Yeah.
Oh wow. Do you think that's an actual reference? I haven't seen those items.
No, it's not an actual reference, because this would have been written, I think, before they came out.
Oh right.
I think it's just a complete coincidence, and it's just then we get a title sequence.
Yes. Oh, balls.
Thankfully, the Doctor and Rose are partying on the TARDIS.
Yes, they are, and we have a very different Doctor. I mean, holy crap! You know what? Every single Tennant episode, at least in his first season, we're probably going to be going, or I'm at least going to be going, oh my god, we have such a different kind of Doctor right now. I mean, like, he's just so much more bombastic and happy and jolly and up for a party and up for a laugh. He's more sociable and so on and so forth. This is no exception to that rule. He is talking about, like, he used to be a punk. He used to go to gigs. Why else would you have a TARDIS except to go to cool places and have fun?
Well, yeah, because he lists, you know, off the top of his head, a list of places that he could possibly take Rose.
Yeah.
Battle of Trafalgar, the Anti-Gravity Olympics, Caesar crossing the Rubicon, or Ian Drury in Sheffield, England, in 1979.
Yeah.
You know, he says, what is a TARDIS for? You know,
and yeah, that's my point. That's my point. This
is about having fun.
Yeah, that's exactly... Dude, that's exactly what I said. Eccleston was not like that. Like,
no.
For Eccleston, having a TARDIS, it was going to the final frontier, like explore strange new worlds. That's the TARDIS for Eccleston, right? And here we have someone who's basically hijacked the Enterprise and is using it to go pick up chicks.
Yeah, and he is going on a date with Rose.
Yeah,
yet another date.
They plop off, and instead of arriving in 1979's Sheffield, they arrive in 1879's Scotland.
It's close.
It's relatively close. They got two digits.
Terms,
right? Exactly. It's the same planets. Anyway, they step out of the TARDIS, are immediately apprehended. There's some kind of caravan, basically, and yada yada yada. It turns out they've bumped into Queen Victoria. We've got another queen to add to the Vindex. Sweet.
The Doctor introduces himself as Dr. James McCrimmon.
Oh, McCrimmon. Okay, I've got McKinnon in my... Oh, McCrimmon.
No,
okay.
McCrimmon.
All right, cool.
From the township of Ballamory. Ballamory being a BBC One children's TV show.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
And James McCrimmon being Jamie, the companion from the second Doctor.
Oh, really?
Correct.
Oh, wow. I didn't... That's fantastic. I didn't know that.
Played, of course, by Fraser Hines.
Who we did meet.
And
yes,
he is the longest-serving companion, going by number of episodes.
Oh, really? Again, another fact I was not aware of. That's awesome. Okay, so, all right. Nice trivia. They meet Queen Vicky, and they acknowledge... Let's put a pin in this, okay? They acknowledge that Rose is practically naked. That's a quote. She is practically naked. And the reason for this is that she's wearing her, like, dungarees, and she's looking like a chav, basically. And she, as opposed to wearing, like, 20 skirts on top of each other, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Pin, she's naked, I wish. And so they carry on. They're now part of the entourage.
Queen Victoria is going to...
Did you say they do Queen Victoria?
Is there a
missing scene? I didn't see.
Queen Victoria mentions that she's had an assassination attempt on her life.
Yeah.
And they're going to go and...
hang on, let's build a little bridge back to Eccleston. And and Rose goes, holy shit, I didn't realize this. Like, when you hear of assassination attempts, you think of people like JFK. You don't think Queen Victoria. Shazam, back in season one of the Doctor Who revival, we saw a sketch of, or possibly a photo? No, yeah, it was a photo, well, mock-up, I guess, of Eccleston's Doctor at JFK's assassination.
Correct.
Shazam.
And before I get on to my next bit of trivia...
Yeah. Oh, sweet!
I will point out at this point that Rose is the single most irritating companion that has ever walked the
Earth. Yeah, she's crazy annoying in this one. She's crazy annoying.
Basically, she makes a bet with the Doctor for a tenner that she cannot get... That she can get...
Queen Victoria.
Queen Victoria to say, we are not amused.
Yeah, which... Okay... I'm going to agree slash disagree with you. Or, like, open brackets, dis, close brackets, agree with you. I think, as far as bets go, this is a pretty good one. Like, this could make for a really fun banter session across the episode. But the execution is kind of shit. It's a good idea. I think it's a good idea. You may not agree.
Yeah, but... No, the idea is fine. And sadly, how it's done during the episode is just bloody irritating.
Yeah, it is. Mainly because it's unsophisticated. Like, every single time that she tries to get Queen Vicky to say, we are not amused, she just goes... one isn't amused, is one, or something to that effect. It's like, well, that's bullshit. You're not exactly NLPing Vicky right now. Make an effort, Rose. Make an effort.
Which he doesn't do. Anyway, trivia time.
Sorry. Yeah, or trivia. Oh my god, sweet.
In the John Pertwee episode, The Curse of Peladon, Pertwee's doctor says to Joe Grant, who's the companion, that he was actually at Queen Victoria's coronation.
Oh, really?
Correct.
Okay.
At the end of the episode, because the coronation on Peladon didn't actually occur and Joe's a bit miserable, as she hasn't got to go to one.
Yeah.
The Doctor takes Joe off to see Queen Victoria's coronation again.
Oh.
Because the Doctor in this episode mentions that he was at the coronation.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, nice one. Okay, can I ask, when he takes his companion to see the coronation again, as in, like, I've been there, I'm now going to go back there, is there a Marty McFly element there where he, like, sees himself?
No, it's right at the end of the episode. The end of the episode is Joe and the Doctor going off in the TARDIS to the coronation. We don't actually see the coronation.
Oh, cool. Okay. Oh, that's fine. By the way, Curse of the Peladon, written by the Spoon Meister, I believe.
Dennis Spooner did a lot of things.
Ah, Spoon. Ah, the Spoon Hammer.
Victoria is played by Pauline Collins.
Ooh, okay.
Pauline Collins has a prior Doctor Who connection.
No freaking way. Go for it.
In the Patrick Troughton episode...
Oh, shit. Really? Going back? Okay.
The Faceless Ones, which was the...
No wonder I didn't recognize her.
The last episode of Ben and Polly.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Spoilers. She played a character called Samantha Briggs.
Okay.
And she was invited by the BBC to be the new companion.
Oh,
and
wow.
She turned it down.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She spends the episode as if she is going to be a new companion.
And then she's not. And she actually declined.
Yep,
that's ridiculous.
She turned it down.
That is right up there with Jean-Paul Sartre saying, I don't need a Nobel Prize, thanks.
Sam Briggs, who is her character in The Faceless Ones, was quite blatantly going to be the companion. You watch the episode and you think, you know, oh, look at this random girl that appears in the episode and the Doctor is talking to her. And yeah, she's probably going to be kidnapped by the end of the episode and put in the bondage closet.
Oh, sweet.
With Dodo, Vicky, Barbara. Meanwhile, the carriage arrives at Torchwood House.
Yes, Torchwood, or Torchwood Estate, or whatever it is. They arrive at Torchwood, which obviously rings bells. If this is not familiar to you, lady and or gentleman, I'm sure we'll get into this by the end of this episode. Anyway, yeah, they pull up, and what's his face? Who owns the place?
Rob.
Rob McLeish. So the Robmeister basically goes, listen, kind of feel like maybe you've arrived at a bad time. Like, we don't have any food to offer you, Queen Face. You should probably come back another time. And obviously something is a little bit off. And we recognize that now, no longer sporting orange Tibetan monk outfits, the same kung fu wannabe Matrix people that we saw in the beginning, they're now there in, like, black tie, posing as the butlers.
Father Angelo.
Father Angelo. Why is his name Angelo?
Because that's his name.
Yeah, why is his name Angelo? Okay. Seriously, why does he have a name that is... It is Latin, ablative singular for angel. Why is this guy, who's clearly like a shitbag, why is he named Angel when he's a Scotsman dressed as a Tibetan monk?
There is no reason for this.
I think that conundrum answered itself. Okay, yeah. Sorry, go for it.
And then we get the first of Rose's completely useless attempts to get Victoria to say we are not amused.
Yeah.
And I'll quote it, because it sums up exactly what you said earlier.
Okay.
Thinks he's funny, but I'm so not amused. What do you think, Mom?
Ugh. Say that again, but in a slightly more hoarse voice.
Thinks he's funny, but I'm so not amused.
Okay, well, actually, somewhere there in between, would pinpoint, I don't know, the frequency at which an erection is automatically induced. Anyway, let's get back to the show. That's a shit attempt at making her say we are not amused.
Yes.
Yeah, it pisses me off. Anyway, so fine, they're now there, blah, blah, blah.
They're now there. They take a small box, pin time.
Yes.
From the carriage. And basically, the doctor gets told, you never saw this, go away.
Yeah, can I ask? Because I'm simply not aware of the history, as in, of this box, or rather the contents thereof. Was it said that Queen Victoria never went anywhere without that box? As in, was that box always with her? Because basically, fuck it, I'm going to spoil this right now. The box contains a certain diamond, and the reason she is on this, like, caravan with her whole entourage high-fiving everyone that she encounters is because she's taking the diamond to be recut, which, by the way, when we get to that point, let's put a pin in that as well.
Okay, the Koh-i-Noor diamond was recut in the year after the Great Exhibition.
Okay.
The Great Exhibition was 1851, so it was recut in 1852.
Okay.
I am unsure why, therefore, she would recut it 25 years later.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm really looking forward to us getting to that point, by the way. So I'm not saying, like, let's rush it to that point, but I'm wondering, why is that fucking box there right now? Like, there is no point. There's no reason that box needs to be there.
Yeah, there was...
Bloody hell. God, I hate this episode.
The Koh-i-Noor diamond was eventually put into a brooch. And it would have been done, actually, before 1879. It would have been done around about 1875 or something like that.
Okay.
And it was put into a brooch, and it was kept at Windsor Castle.
Oh, really?
So, no, to answer your actual question, no.
I've sort of forgotten what the question was, but, like, basically it's...
Did she carry the fucking thing around with her?
Yeah, exactly. No, she didn't. No. So, no, she didn't. All right, well, that's a freaking plot hole. Well, we'll get to it. Sorry, I'm jumping back and forth here, but this episode's got me really emotional, JD. Also, I'm halfway down my pint of gin and tonic.
They get a tour of Torchwood House.
Yeah, well, sort of.
Including the telescope room.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
The telescope room will become important later, and a replica of this telescope room appears in the TARDIS.
Oh, really?
In Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS.
Oh, really? Oh, I don't remember that at all. That's awesome.
You see the astronomy section in Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS. It's actually a replica of this room.
Is that just because they happen to still have the props, or is that like a fun little thing?
I think it's meant to be a fun little thing.
Okay. Oh, that's really cool. I have not seen that. That's very cool. Okay, anyway, here's something that kind of bothers me a little bit about this telescope room. So the telescope is actually, it's renowned as being this sort of this, it's this famous feat of scientific ingenuity, right? Like, people know about this. The doctor, does the doctor know about this? I'm not sure. Queenface certainly knows about this telescope. It's like, holy shit, this is such an awesome invention, such a fantastic construction, proof of mankind's genius, right?
Yeah.
But, spoiler alert, this telescope doesn't work. I mean, it's not a telescope. It doesn't work the way that you think it's... this is a massive spoiler, but whatever. You're listening to this episode now, lady and or gentleman. It doesn't matter. But it doesn't work, so why would it be famous as being, like, this amazing telescope?
No, and even the doctor says it's a bit rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like, he looks at it, first thing he notices, it's, oh, well, this is not built the way it should be built. Like, everything's the wrong way around.
He says it's beautiful, but it's shit.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, so why is it so renowned? why are people talking about what a great telescope this thing that doesn't work as a telescope, right, is? That's my point. Anyway, let's carry on. Blah, 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 blah.
And Queen Victoria does say at this point that late husband, Prince Albert,
oh, yeah,
heard about a local superstition about a local wolf.
Yes.
And we will get to the story over dinner.
Yeah. Do we cut to the dinner now? I can't remember.
No, we get to Rose in a bedroom, but we get Rose's...
Oh, wait, what?
Second attempt.
Oh, I see. Yes.
We get Rose's second attempt.
Because she complains about, like, why would you have scientific inclinations? Surely that's unchristian. We are not amused, are we? Something to that effect.
No, no, it's about her clothing, because Victoria turns around and goes, could we please find some clues for Miss Tyler? I'm tired of her nakedness.
Yes. Oh, okay, right. So this, let's refer back to the pin, but let's also keep referring back to this pin. In the beginning, she was, like, when they first met, in, like, when they first materialized, Vicky was freaking not amused by Rose's nudity, right? Like, to her, she is practically naked, i.e. freaking ipso goddamn facto, she needs to put some clothes on her. Like, just put a coat over her shoulders. But she carries on to be quote-unquote practically naked across the entire freaking plot.
Yeah, you know, she is taken away to go and get some clothes at this point, but plot happens to her, sadly.
Sure, but I think still, the equivalent would be, it's a little bit silly from our point of view, like temporally, from our temporal point of view, because to us she isn't naked, obviously, she's wearing her dungarees or whatever, but it would be the equivalent of you pick up these two hitchhikers and one of them is in her underwear, like she is literally just wearing a thong and I'm thinking kind of a lacy kind of bra, like maybe off-white, cream-colored maybe.
Hardly
head just right. Sorry, yeah, anyway, so that's the equivalent, right? But everyone in this episode seems completely okay with her walking around in her dungarees.
Apart
whereas if this
color.
Were in present day and she were wearing like actual present day underwear, no one would be okay with this. As in, sorry, hands up, guys. Like, I would be totally okay with it, but everyone would react to it. That's my point. And at this point, people only react to it when it serves the plot.
Correct. And she doesn't actually change out of her dungarees.
Exactly. Exactly. And everyone seems cool with this. Anyway, sorry. It's a lot of attention to something so trivial, but it just annoys me a little bit, to be honest.
So Rose gets to the bedroom and she starts looking through closets to try and find some clothes, and she eventually finds a serving maid in a cupboard.
Flora.
Yes. Flora Light, basically...
Flora Light? Is that her name?
It could be Flora Buttery, Flora Original.
Oh, sorry. No, that's a good one. I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
Miss Buttery is a bit scared.
Yes.
Because they took the steward and the master away. And we, as viewers, know this is going to end badly.
Yeah.
Because Rose is like pestilence. She is the harbinger of death to the lower classes. Because when she talked to the blue plumber in The End of the World...
Oh my god, you are... That is the best... Oh, sorry, I don't want to cut you off. Carry on. This is a work of genius. Carry on, sir.
The blue plumber died.
Yeah.
When she had this scene almost exactly in Unquiet Dead in the kitchen, then later on, Gwen died.
Holy
and
shit.
Now, and it's probably not a spoiler because... Flora dies.
Yes, she does. That is mind-blowing, dude. That is a fantastic connection to make. Nice one.
So, anyway, the doctor is in the dining room waiting to Rose.
Yes, and we get
and
a little story.
Kung Fu Monk basically says she's been delayed by her clothing.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, knowing Rose, yeah, probably. She's probably trying to find the most expensive clothing.
Yeah, it's not unlikely. Anyway, all right, so there.
We get an intercut here between a ghost story, which is being told in the dining room.
Yeah.
And Rose and the servants of the house.
Yeah.
In
the basement.
In the stable. I was going to say stables.
Oh, are they stables? Oh, maybe they are. I thought they were like a cellar or something.
It could be a cellar, yeah.
All right, whatever. They're locked up somewhere.
And as the story goes on, we get to see a cage in the cellar and...
Yeah, wait, hang on. Let's actually talk about this reveal, all right?
So yeah, go on.
They are in... They're in this cellar or basement or whatever. They're in that place, the stables. Who cares? They are there. The monks who have, like... They've chained all these people to the wall. They go down these stairs. Oh, yeah, actually, you know what? It is a basement because they walk downstairs.
Yeah.
And they're carrying this, like, massive cage. But over the cage. Like, the cage is draped in some sort of whatever. Like, there's... It's covered anyway. You can't see what's in the cage or in the box at this point. Everyone looks at this thing. They pull off, like, the canvas that covers this cage. And we don't see at this point what's in the cage. Or, spoiler alert, who's in the cage. But everyone screams. Everyone's like, holy shitting balls! Not that! Except, spoiler alert, during this cutaway that we're going through right now, we're gonna see what's in the cage, and it's just a guy. Like, it's another monk, effectively, right? As far as we know, it's another monk in this cage. Why would you scream if you saw a dude in a cage?
He does have black eyes. Although it is very dark.
It is very dark, yeah. I don't know if... You are right, he does have black eyes. I guess that might be the explanation. I don't think that's worthy of getting everyone to collectively scream.
No, neither do I. But, you get Rose talking to this guy.
Yeah.
Intercut with Robert doing a story of a werewolf.
Yeah. And actually, this is a fantastic conversation that Rose is having with the dude.
Oh, absolutely. You get a very good scene right at the end of the werewolf and Rose.
Yeah, which we have to soundbite, by the way, I think. If it's what... I think
well,
you're going to say.
There's a number of good lines here.
Okay, sure.
The first one is about the werewolf wanting to bite Queen Victoria, and basically.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Sorry. Let's explain what's going on here. The dude in the cage, he's a werewolf, sort of. Whatever. Hence, he's in a cage, right? He clearly is not completely normal, and everyone can tell. So Rose goes, "Wait, hang on. Where are you from? As in, which planet are you from?" And all of a sudden, those two kind of build this little bubble between the two of them, where he recognizes that she knows about life on other worlds, and she recognizes that he is not human. And they have a little conversation. Whatever, he used to be human, he was then inhabited by some kind of alien beings that could, like, grow inside of him and take him over, and now he is completely freaking alien. Like, biologically he is human, but mentally he is some evil, evil fucking alien. Put a pin in that for the end of this episode, right? But there is also one line in there that he says to her, which I really want to soundbite. I think you know which line I mean. Soundbite this?
I have two lines, but they come right after each other.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So, soundbite number one.
Say your eyes, you've seen it too. Seen what? The wolf, there is something of the wolf about you.
Which is fantastic, right? That's pretty...
Which refers to...
Bad Wolf.
Bad Wolf.
Yeah. Which, by the way, also in my notes, I've said, and this is a note that I've made for you. In my notes, I've written, see, she is the Bad Wolf. It's not just the corporation. Because remember we had this debate back when we were doing Bad Wolf, and you were explaining, oh, this is why she called herself Bad Wolf. And I still didn't get it, because admittedly, I was being a complete idiot. But... I don't think that she just called herself Bad Wolf because she wanted... As in, I don't think that she appropriated the name of the corporation in whose office they happened to be at the point in time they had to go back to, or go forwards to. I think she actually is the Bad Wolf. Like, it's more than a coincidence here.
It's a predestination paradox. She becomes the entire thing because of that sign, which then involves her entire life because of Dalek Khan and all of his machinations going back in time, and it's just like a whole mess.
Oh, yeah, all right. Anyway, I think it's a little bit like in Lost, where you get some points that are like, whoa, that is mega profound. There is some kind of reference. I haven't taken the time to wrap my medulla oblongata around it, but just at first glance, it seems like this is the most profound reference I've ever encountered in popular culture. But then, if you then, like, off the air, take some time and actually think about it, you go, well, they actually just... They've made a reference to something that makes no sense whatsoever. It's only profound because you haven't thought about it, you know? It's a little bit like The Matrix, where you ham-fist all of these cultural references, but not a single one of them has any meaning. But when you watch the film, and by the way, I love The Matrix, but when you watch the film, you go, holy shit, this has philosophical depth, but it doesn't.
No, it really doesn't.
Yeah, the same thing I think can be said about Bad Wolf. I think it's absolutely spiffing. I love the whole concept. But when you think about it, it's just dumb.
But on the topic of werewolves,
yeah,
of which this won't be one,
yeah.
We have had werewolves in Big Finish,
mm-hmm.
in the audiobook Loop Guru back in 2001, okay. and in the Sylvester McCoy episode, The Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Wait, hang on. Okay, that's awesome. Remind me of the audiobook, the Loop Guru?
It's Loop Guru, yeah. It's a 2001 Peter Davison and Turlough.
Oh, I see.
Big Finish audiobook.
That's been referenced in something that you and I have reviewed, though.
I think it was done by the same writer as...
Oh, that's what it is. Because I know that you've mentioned Phobos. It before.
Yeah.
Phobos. Bloody Phobos. All right, great. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, you should listen to our review of Phobos. We did not like that one.
And the werewolf in Greatest Show in the Galaxy
okay.
is not a werewolf again. It's an alien.
Is it the same kind of alien?
No.
Are there ever proper werewolves?
No.
Okay, so are you trying to tell me that werewolves are a little bit like yetis in the sense
yes.
that...
Oh, no.
Well, there are only kinds of yetis. There are the yetis that are clearly fucking yetis, but that people claim are Mongolians in coats. And then there are robots.
Yes.
But there are no actual yetis ever.
No.
Doctor Who. Okay, the writers of Doctor Who, please bear in mind that I have to document all creatures that the Doctor encounters in the visual index on whobackwhen.com. You are not making my life very easy here. God damn it. Okay.
And soundbite number two. Soundbite?
Soundbites.
Burnt like the sun, but all I require is the moon.
Which is self-explanatory and absolutely totally kick-ass.
So what happens now is that the werewolf is bathed in moonlight.
Sexy.
And starts transforming from a man into what people traditionally think of as a werewolf.
And also, might I add, the effect that we get of the dude turning into a wolf, or a werewolf, or whatever. Actually, of the dude somehow transmogrified... God damn it, of the guy transforming into something, right? It's... incredibly American Werewolf in London. It looks exactly like that. And I don't want to plagiarize something I've heard on another podcast, but I'm sure someone at some point has had this conversation. Actually, lots of people have probably had this conversation, so maybe let's not go into depth here. But since American Werewolf in London, I think this is the way that every single werewolf has, like, with the exception of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, this is how every person who is a werewolf turns into a wolf.
Yeah, apart from Buffy and apart from Twilight.
Oh, you're right. Stupid Twilight, where they just go, poof! Suddenly you're a wolf.
But
and your genes are fine.
Even being human
does
something exactly like this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very similar. God, that was a good show, by the way. All right.
So the doctor in the dining room finally realizes something is up. Do you know what? I do have a phrase which sums up this scene and Father Angelo's character in general.
Okay.
No more monkery.
No more monkery. No, more monkery, please.
No more monkery. This is the problem. This is what we get, monkery, you know. This is bad monkery. This is non-Peter Butterworth monkery.
Oh, I want to throw an auditory high five to the Rawmeister. Nice reference, JD. Nice one. Okay, so he says this stupid Latin phrase over and over again. The doctor puts two and two together, basically goes, right, well, that dude clearly wears orange in his spare time. And then, Shazam, everything turns to shit.
And now we get 20 minutes of running up and down the corridors.
Yeah.
That's being actually chased... what it feels like.
That is pretty much exactly spot on. They're being chased by this werewolf, who, by the way, looks badass. I mean, the CGI involved in this, super well done. Super well done. And we've got this massive goddamn wolf running around. It chases them into the library, first of all. Actually, wait, hang on. Let's get to the library in a bit, because it pisses me off when they get to the library. Whatever. They're in there. They cannot escape from the house because the monks are outside now. They're, like, wearing mistletoe, I think it is. And they're sporting what, in my notes I've said, are semi-automatic rifles, which makes no sense for the time.
Well, it makes no sense considering they'd be better without their rifles because they're fucking kung fu monks.
Oh, that's also true. What happened to their kung fu... What happened to their kung fu skills?
It makes no sense. And anyway...
The kung fu is the yeti of the story.
Yeah, Father Angelo kung fu powers obviously completely fail him when he is offed by a small handgun held in the handbag of Queen Victoria.
Yeah, it's a Gardebelt gun.
Yeah, and considering he's been able to disarm Robert, who was a soldier.
Yeah, by like freaking matrixing all over the place.
A, you know, 60-year-old elderly queen, he just doesn't. He's also apparently lost his kung fu-ness at this point.
I totally agree with you.
More people die. The steward dies. Robert dies in the kitchen.
I was going to say, in the kitchen, this is where we learn something kind of interesting. So the monks who are outside sporting semi-automatic rifles, which are completely anachronistic, they are wearing these like wreaths of what we learn is mistletoe. And it seems as though mistletoe is somehow, like, it's a werewolf repellent. We find out these aliens who look exactly like werewolves but are not werewolves, they aren't actually allergic to mistletoe, but the monks have somehow psychologically conditioned them to believe that mistletoe is a controlling factor and or harmful to them. Or did I misunderstand that? I think that's exactly what happens, right?
Oh, yeah. And it gets worse than that.
Yeah, but let's put a pin in that, because they aren't actually, like, mistletoe isn't actually harmful to them. They just, this particular werewolf happens to think that that mistletoe is harmful to it.
Oh, yeah. And we'll get onto this very soon.
Yeah. Pin time. All right.
So meanwhile, while there's running in the corridors, the doctor says that it's not actually a werewolf. It is a light modulated species triggered by specific wavelengths, which is quite good considering he looks at it for 5 seconds.
Well done, doc. I think that's fine. I think in some cases it's okay if the doctor gives a diagnosis just by looking at something, and in this case he has the knowledge that, okay, so moonlight activates it in a way, so clearly light plays a part, basically.
Yes, but a light modulated species triggered by specific wavelengths. It's very specific.
Okay,
considering
I'm reaching, you're right.
The ending, because we know he has met other werewolves which are not light based creatures.
Oh shit, you're right. No, you are right. You're totally right.
If werewolves were all like this, it would make sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, the last werewolf that he'd met canonically in Doctor Who was certainly not like this at all.
So wait, hang on. Is the werewolf light-based?
That's what it says.
It's made up out of light.
Yes.
Wow.
Which is why the end of the episode is what it is.
I suppose, yeah.
But,
okay, all right, fine.
Stupid either way.
It is stupid. And when we get to it, it'll be thoroughly ridiculed. Okay,
anyway,
whatever.
The steward now dies.
Yeah.
Robert, they die
horrifically. Everyone who dies,
Robert
they
now
die
dies
fucking horrifically.
Oh yeah, it did get torn apart.
Yeah.
And
you get all these, like, wet sounds.
It is good.
It's the sound in my kitchen right now, since there's freaking soda water all over the place. Yeah, I had a G&T accident before we started recording, ladies and gentlemen. But if you were to walk into my kitchen wearing, like, Wellingtons, that's the sound that you hear when they dismember people in this episode. It's like, oh, gross.
So,
slash,
you know,
sexy. Okay,
everyone dies until we're left with the Doctor, Rose, and Queen Victoria, who run into
the library.
And now we get number three bit of Rose.
Okay.
Where she goes, I'll tell you what though, Mom, I bet you're not amused now.
Okay, yeah.
Five people have just died. And
yeah,
she's
horribly.
She's still trying to win a tenner.
Yep. Yeah, okay, listen, £10 is a lot to a lot of people.
She's a time traveler.
Yeah, and she's about to die. I know. No, I get this. I absolutely get how it infuriates you. It infuriates me as well. But, there's nothing. I cannot add anything to the whole we are not amused joke. It wasn't funny the first time. It's certainly not going to be funny the third time. Whatever. In this library, though, we encounter another one of my pet peeves. It's the complete and utter blatant disregard of literature in television media. So in this case, the doctor goes, well, we have a whole arsenal in here. We don't need weapons. We're in a library. These books are our weapons. Like, knowledge is power, basically, right? But then he picks two books completely at random and, like, throws them around. And then, coincidentally, the book that he's picked completely at random happens to tell the story that is relevant to him solving the problem that he's encountering in this episode. But you know what, like, maybe check the spines of these books before you just pull them out and throw them around. I mean, it seems as though TV media does not know how to handle books or anything in a library, ever. Don't just take a book and throw it around. Just because it's got a it's leather bound doesn't mean that it's going to be relevant, right?
Yeah, no, I agree totally, but I have a bigger problem with the library.
Okay, what's the bigger problem?
Well, the Doctor licks the door because he sees some carving of a mistletoe on it.
Yeah, and the wolf, we should say this, the wolf cannot get into the library.
No, and apparently the Viscum album, which is the oil of the mistletoe, has been worked into the wood like a varnish. Okay. And, you know, they forgot the roof, but they did every other bit of it. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
The Doctor now says that the wolf thinks it's allergic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's a problem. There's a problem about this library.
Okay.
Viscum album is a toxin. It's called a ribosome inactivating protein. Do you know what it's most like?
Okay. No, because I didn't know any of the stuff that you just said. That is, that was like Aramaic to me, dude. That went straight over my head. I have no idea. Tell me.
Oh, the next word won't be. Ricin.
What? Are you shitting me? The Doctor just licked a door that was painted with ricin.
Yeah, but that's not the problem, because he is a Time Lord.
Okay, fine.
They're locked in a room where there is ricin, or the equivalent of ricin. Basically, on the walls, on the doors. Anyone that actually read a book in this library was almost going to die. People
should
be
inhaling ricin fumes.
It's very
Is that true? That's insane, man. Okay, what...
It's not as bad as ricin, but it's still toxic. Yeah.
Okay. Well, in that case, maybe I'm okay. My pin kind of still works, but it kind of doesn't work. So, all right, fine. So it's toxic. I didn't know that. That's insane. But because it would be toxic to essentially anyone, right? Like very least humans. But the reason I put a pin into the whole mistletoe thing earlier, and it was this scene. I wanted to get back to it because knowing that the werewolf would try to get into the library, which, by the way, how would you know that? They painted the doors with... They varnished the doors with this mistletoe oil. But the pin was put in place because these werewolf aliens aren't actually freaking allergic to mistletoe. It just happened to be the mental conditioning or psychological conditioning that these particular monks applied to this particular werewolf. So why would you know, why would you take for granted that, okay, well, we can protect ourselves from werewolves by putting mistletoe all over the place? It makes no sense.
No, it really doesn't. And
it would be a different thing if they had had, like, if they had brought in silver, for example. You know, like the whole werewolf lore thing of, they're practically allergic to silver.
That would make infinitely more sense.
Yeah, exactly. And then you could actually say, well, this is an inherent flaw in the genome of werewolf aliens. Like, they are allergic to what we refer to as silver. Or, you know what? Fuck silver. Let's just say that they are all allergic to mistletoe. Like, that would definitely kill all of them. But the fact that you try to overcomplicate it by saying, oh, it's not that they're allergic to it. It's just that this one happens to believe that they are, makes the use of this varnish null and void.
Yep. Yep. Makes no sense.
Makes no sense.
So we get exposition central now, because the Doctor's magic picking off of books has revealed that in 1540, a star arrived from the heavens.
Yeah.
And maybe a single wolf cell survived. and it went host after host through various humans, and it now intends to infect the Queen so it can basically make the British Empire evolve spaceships and stuff like that so it can, you know, probably leave.
Is that the ambition, plan, you think, of the alien?
Yeah.
To basically further the British, or like the Commonwealth, to the point where they are technologically advanced enough to allow it to leave the Earth?
Well, the Doctor says, the Victorian Age accelerated starships and missiles fueled by coal and powered by steam.
Yeah, that whole tangent made no sense to me. I think it sounds really cool. You know what? I want to see an episode of Doctor Who in which they have, I want to see a steampunk episode, basically. I think that's awesome. But, because steampunk in general is, it's just like a really cool concept. But why would you ham-fist that into this? I'm sorry. JD, explain this to me. I do not understand the reason for introducing steampunk into this episode.
For one line. One line.
Yeah, but that one line is the introduction of steampunk into this episode. Like,
No. I'm agreeing with you. There is no reason.
Okay, all right.
And then, still in the Library of Death,
yeah,
we get to both one of my least favourite bits of the episode and my favourite line.
Oh, really? Okay, what's that?
Well, first of all, Victoria finally admits that she's carrying around in her little box a Kohinoor diamond.
Yes.
And she turns around that, I ask only that you find some place of safekeeping for something far older and far more precious than myself. There's no real, you know...
Yeah, what's the reason for safeguarding this diamond if it's at the cost of your life, Queen
Exactly.
Face?
And she's never come across as anything like that. She's, Victoria always came across as very pragmatic. You know, Albert, her late husband, did, you know, try and get the diamond into a good shape for her and stuff like that. So, yeah. You know, I can understand it. You know, she cares about it.
Okay,
but
sure.
But not to this amount. You know, this is just beyond stupidity. But it does give rise to my favourite line.
Okay, what's that?
I think we should soundbite it.
Okay, all right, I'm up for that. Soundbite.
Jackie Tyler bite.
Good job my mum's not here. She'd be fighting the wolf off with a bare hand for that thing.
She'd win.
Yeah, nice one. Oh, yeah. I miss Jackie.
Yeah, she'd improve this episode.
Yeah, when did we last see her? Was that the last episode?
Yes, at the very start of it.
Actually, yeah, that's exactly right. I already miss her.
So, the Doctor gives us a history lesson saying that Prince Albert kept cutting down the Kohinoor.
Yeah.
And then he does his Sherlock Holmes thing of starting to put everything together.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. Okay, sure. I'm not even going to bother with a pin. When we get to the shit telescope, I'm gonna drop a steamer on this episode.
Well, let's head to there right now. Because
yeah, let's do that.
The wolf comes through the skylight.
But I mean, they leave the library.
They didn't rice in the skylight. Flora Buttery arrives with some boiling water, which she throws at the wolf.
Oh, yeah.
The wolf runs off because yes. Flora Buttery has basically put mistletoe in the water.
So, oh, man. Flora Buttery. Oh.
She's doing quite well.
Buttery women.
So like basically, they now run to the observatory.
I'm a fan. Yes, sorry. Yes, they do. They run to this observatory. The room containing the telescope that is famous for being a great telescope, even though it's a shit one. And blah, 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 blah. Rob Face, he now sacrifices himself, right?
Correct.
And we are treated to more squelching noises as the werewolf disembowels him hot. And then inside the observatory, what happens? So Doc has the diamond in his hands, blah, blah, blah.
What the Doctor does is he sticks the Kohinoor diamond
yes.
into a slot on the Knott telescope.
That's not what he does.
Oh, go on.
No, I'm sorry. No, he doesn't introduce it into the telescope.
Oh, no,
he
sorry.
He and Rose start like...
they rotate the telescope.
Yeah, well, I was going to say jacking it off. Like, they essentially jack off this telescope that isn't a telescope until it is perfectly aligned with the moon. Moonlight shines in into the telescope. Like, they basically turn it around, I think. Like, they flip it back to front.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So moonlight goes into the telescope, the wrong end, quote-unquote. Flashes across, like is reflected across a few prisms, and then shines onto a spot on the floor, onto which the Doctor places the diamond. At which point, the diamond, even though he didn't, like, he's not manipulating it, the diamond automatically, auto-bloody-matically, fixates itself onto the werewolf who isn't a werewolf. Like, it just automatically targets this thing and thus elevates it. It is freaking elevated off the floor. I'm sorry, I'm so goddamn pissed off right now, dude. I am so pissed off. It is elevated, blah, 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 blah. The goddamn human being inside of it, who shouldn't even be able to speak English because he was like an infant when he was taken over by this alien, all of a sudden starts speaking English and going like, oh my god, just crank it up a little bit. Release me from this stupid werewolf who isn't a werewolf. They crank it up because how the fuck do you crank up moonlight and then they evaporate the alien, who, by the way, looks exactly like a human being with a wolf head.
I can...
Oh, so pissed off right now.
Only disagree with one thing you've said.
Oh, really? Oh, please, go for it. Go for it. anything that you can say that can abate my hatred for this scene is welcomed.
I can understand how they can increase the intensity.
How?
Because what they're doing is they're focusing the prisms so that the beams of light line up.
Oh,
that,
okay.
That I can understand.
Okay, fine. Explain the automatic targeting system of the diamond.
No.
Okay. Explain this to me as well. Let's go back to the pin that we didn't even bother putting in before because it was so blatant. She was on her way to recut the diamond because even when he died, Prince Albert was not convinced that the diamond was complete. Like, it wasn't perfect, right?
Correct.
That's the backstory that we get. He kept cutting this diamond, cutting it over and over and over and over and over again because it was never exactly right. And now we understand that exactly right would mean it will automatically target the wolf or whatever. But it wasn't exactly right, hence why she's there in the first place. So why does this diamond even work as a weapon against the werewolf that isn't a werewolf? Fuck this episode.
Well. Don't really have much more to say for that one, really.
Oh, who wrote this?
I don't know. Was it Russell T. Davis? It might as well
have been. I think it might have been. Okay, anyway. All right, let's just go on. The wolf is now dead. In fact, the wolf has been evaporated. At which point, by the way, let's just explain this as well. So the light, it bounces off the diamond onto the wolf, elevates, blah, 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 disintegrates the wolf, at which point there is no more moonlight. The moon ceases to emit any kind of radiance the second the wolf is dead. Shouldn't this diamond just be like throwing moonlight all over the place?
Yes.
But it's not. Anyway, so the wolf is gone and we get this tiny little thing of like, oh wait, Queen Face, did it bite you? Oh no, it didn't. It was a splinter. I'm fine. Blah, 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 blah. Clearly Queen Face McVicky has been bitten or scratched or whatever. So now Queen Face McVicky is a werewolf. And we have to discuss that later on as well.
Yeah. We go to one of the rooms downstairs.
Okay.
And for saving her life...
Yeah,
the
this is the following day. This isn't, like, immediately afterwards.
Oh,
this
no,
is
no.
the
it's,
following
it's,
day.
It's morning, yeah.
Yeah.
The Doctor is knighted, Sir Doctor of TARDIS.
Very cool, okay.
And Rose is made a Dame Rose of the Powell Estate.
Which is hilarious and awesome. I like it.
And then Queen Victoria says... Well,
never come back
here because, you know, you consort with demons and while you have saved my life, you're a danger and you run around laughing and joking when everything is going to hell. Fuck off. Leave my world. Never come back. Bye bye.
Yeah.
she's pissed off.
Oh, she's very pissed off. Can I just make a little point for about the scene?
Yes, I've got some as well. So you first.
OK, no. Please go ahead. Sorry. No,
go on.
OK. Ladies and gentlemen, JD is like, he's such a gentleman. That's so courteous. Okay, right, fine. All right, fine. I just have one tiny point to make. This is the following day. They have had plenty of time, e.g. to change clothes. But Rose is still, quote-unquote, practically naked because she is still wearing her stupid dungarees over her, like, purple t-shirt or pink t-shirt or whatever. She is still considered naked by Queen Face. Why would Queen Face make her a dame, the whole, like, swords on shoulders business, when in her mind, Rose is basically wearing a thong and, like, a really nice lacy bra, really hugs her in the right ways? Sorry, yes, what was that?
Right, my problem.
Okay, what's your problem? What's your problem, man?
First of all...
Okay.
In the Victorian era,
yeah,
she can't make someone a dame. The only way you could be a dame, the only way you could be a dame is by marrying someone. It's not
really?
An honor. It's not an honor you can be given. That's a flaw in the episode.
Oh, that's a big one. I had no idea about this. Presumably, most people who watched this had no idea either.
No.
But I agree. I think that's something that they should have taken into account.
And number two isn't a failure. It's a Doctor Who trivia.
Okay, nice one. I like those.
This is the second time in Doctor Who history where the Doctor has been knighted.
Oh, nice. When's the first time?
Peter Davison's story, The King's Demons.
Oh, who knights him?
A robot version of King John.
Oh, very cool. That's very cool. So technically he wasn't knighted because it wasn't actually King John.
It was a robot version of King John.
Okay, fair enough. So like on paper he's been knighted, but like actually he wasn't. So this is now the first time that he's probably been
knighted,
unless we find out that Queen Victoria was actually a robot who turned into a werewolf who wasn't really a werewolf.
Which might be possible.
Also possible, yes.
So
anyway, she banishes them.
We get two final scenes. The first is the Doctor and Rose basically going off to the TARDIS, all happy and giddy and going, oh, the royal family, they're all werewolves. Oh, isn't it good? And not caring at all about the 8 or 9 people that died gratuitously in the past 24
hours. That's not the only thing that they don't care about. Okay, so I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off here. Queen Face has been infected by... Queen Face has been made a werewolf. She's now a werewolf, right?
Correct. This is the assumption that these people come to.
Yeah, and I mean... I'm sorry, do we
know? It's a fair assumption.
Assumption. What we learned in this episode was twofold. Numero uno, dude, Meister. When you are made a werewolf, the alien part, like the wolf part of you, takes over. I mean, that's a given. You're made a werewolf, that werewolf will now direct all of your actions, all of your thoughts, all of your emotions, and you will be trapped inside it, completely helpless, right? This is why the human being who was trapped inside the wolf earlier begged to be released, because he had just been trapped inside his own body forever, right?
So what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, why doesn't the Doctor go and stick Vicky in the beam of light?
Yeah, exactly. Or just fucking chop her head off right then and there. So
let's go with beam of light.
Beam of light is probably a better option. Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, yeah. He's already been banished. He doesn't need to be beheaded as well. So anyway, that's number one. Number two is we found out that the alien actually intended to infect the Queen so that the Queen could take over, so that the wolf in the position of royalty could take over the country and bring forth this steampunk era that will never be mentioned again. I would not say that Doc and Rose won because they light beam the alien. I would say the fucking alien totally, like, mission accomplished, right? Queen Face is now a werewolf. It is now inevitable that we will have a steampunk era.
And? If we ignore New Who for a second and go on the timeline of Doctor Who in general.
Yeah.
By 1974... we had a British space program.
Oh, yeah.
Because John Pertwee's era was all about the British space program. And
nice.
In 1969, I think it was the Faceless Ones, we had the first British rocket.
Okay.
So it was very much more, Britain was much more accelerated in the Doctor Who universe than it wasn't. So yes, you're probably right. It won. And the Doctor, who knows it's won with Rose, is now just swanning off to the TARDIS, even though he knows Queen Victoria's been infected.
Yeah. Okay, I have to ask you a question because frankly, I don't remember, but and this would be a New Who question, but do we ever hear anything about the royal family being werewolves again?
No.
Okay, so I think it's probably safe to assume that their assumption in this episode was incorrect. She actually wasn't bitten. It actually was just a splinter.
Maybe they're just very good at hiding themselves.
Okay, yeah, that's also a possibility. But if... Wait, no, it's not a possibility because they wouldn't hide themselves because the wolf would take over. Basically, there are two options. Either they're werewolves, in which case the world is fucked, or they're not werewolves, in which case Doc and Rose were wrong in making the assumption in this episode.
And there is a third one.
Oh, what's that?
It doesn't matter which of those two outcomes, the Doc and Rose are swanning off thinking that they're werewolves without actually solving the situation.
Okay.
So the Doc really should just go back, irrespective of which of your options one or two it is, and try and solve the problem.
Yeah, you should probably check up on the royal family at some point. Will and Kate. Yeah. Hey, Kate, do you know what you've married into now? Like, essentially, there should be some follow-up work. You're right.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're totally right.
And that was episode ending number one. Episode ending number two is the Queen and her lady in waiting. Isabel.
Rob's wife.
The widow.
Yeah. It's such a shame that Rob killed himself.
Yeah.
He didn't need to. He really didn't need to. Okay.
Basically, we must defend ourselves, and if the Doctor returns to Earth, then Torchwood will be waiting.
Yeah. So she's creates
setting up our
the
spin-off. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. She creates the Torchwood Institute. Okay, so I have one thing that really pisses me off about this.
Only one?
I want to preface this by saying I think it is absolutely fantastic that we get the origin story of Torchwood. I love that. And I loved watching Torchwood as well, as a series, I mean, as a spin-off. I thought it was great, right? So now we get an origin story for it. We have the backstory. We know where it started off. I am pleased with that. But Queenface McVicky basically just goes, so this house of yours, I know that you don't like this house anymore because your husband died in it and whatnot, but fuck it. I'm Vicky McQueenface. I'm just taking your house. I am genuinely just taking your property and I'm turning it into the base of operations for the spin-off. You are now de facto homeless. What's your name? Isabel? Is it Isabel? I think it's Isabel. Isabel, you're homeless now. You should get addicted to crack pronto. That's not cool.
No. That's very true.
All right, fine. Anyway, so that's the end of the episode.
I think it's review time.
Reviews. It is review time.
Please, after you.
All right, so there are so many things in this episode that make no sense. I didn't even know about the ricin before we started talking about this. Thanks for enlightening me there. Ricin, insane. How does Albert know that blah blah blah, mistletoe, yada yada yada, makes no sense. We get another werewolf who isn't a werewolf, pisses me off a little bit. I understand that conceptually because it's a sci-fi show, it's not a fantasy show, but it still ticks me off a little bit. The joke's crap. I think they try to cram too much into this. Predominantly, we've already mentioned this essentially, but predominantly that concerns the Tibetan monks. Why are they Tibetan monks? They don't need to be because it is never featured again. Presumably, they just all of a sudden got access to, I don't know, maybe like the wires or the harnesses that are used for that slow motion pole vault scene in the beginning and therefore felt a need to use it. Or maybe it is actually a reference back to that ident, the BBC ident that you mentioned before, JD. I don't know, I haven't seen it. Either way, it makes no sense, it's completely unnecessary, and it actually just takes away from the episode. I love that we get to see Tennant, or that we get to hear Tennant speak in his natural accent in this one. He is a Scotsman, is he not? I believe he is.
He is indeed, yeah.
And I think it's wonderful that we get to see him be himself for once, and paradoxically, pretending to be someone else in being himself. I think that's wonderful. But pretty much everything that he gets to say and do in this episode is nonsensical. How does he solve this mystery? Happenstance. How did he find the backstory of the wolf or the monster? A ridiculous coincidence, but just by taking a random book off a shelf and opening it on a random page and, wow, coincidence alert, that happens to be the page that contains a freaking double page spread of a picture illustrating exactly the question or the answer to the question that he's asked in the first place. Stupid and annoying. There are three things that I like about this. Number one, atmosphere. I think they absolutely nail it. There is that unmistakable, that sort of uncanny atmosphere of the Wolfman, of Frankenstein, of Dracula, of like the classic horrors about this episode. Setting aside the Kung Fu scene, because that's bullshit, but the rest of it is gothic horror, and it works very well. Number two. We get the backstory of Torchwood. Great. Number three, the pacing of the episode, to which I'm going to ham-fist the CGI elements. I think the special effects are amazing. I think the editing of this episode is great. And in general, like, just the pacing of this episode, it makes it very watchable. I will happily rewatch it again right now, and it will feel as though I only spent 15 minutes watching Doctor Who, even though I spent a full 3/4 of an hour. But I will still hate it for the same reasons that I've already listed, and that we've already listed. Sorted. I am going over the same thing over and over again. I'm giving this episode a, for atmosphere alone, I'm giving it a, I'm exhausted. I'm giving it a 1.9. Yeah, there you go, 1.9. I'll shut up now. JD, what do you think of this?
Okay. My main problems with this episode should theoretically be fairly small, but sadly there are just so many of them. The biggest problem in the entire episode is A, the werewolf isn't a werewolf. B, the Kung Fu monks are there for no reason at all. There is no reason for them. They are pointless after the credits. They were pointless before the credits, but, you know, let's give them 5 minutes of fame. The telescope, which isn't a telescope, the magical diamond of levitation, the ricin wallpaper, it adds up to something which is far less than the sum of its parts. The good bit, Pauline Collins as Queen Victoria does an amazing job. She's obviously been in Doctor Who before. She did a great job both times she's been in it. Rose is spectacularly annoying. this is sadly no longer season one Rose. I cannot wait for next week when she's shown up by a metal dog, a 50-year-old companion, and Mickey.
Yeah, which, spoiler alert, we're reviewing right after this. Sorry for cutting you off. Actually, sorry, can I cut you off again and ask you a question? Do you think that she is more annoying now because they are trying to change the dynamic between her and the Doctor? Because part of her making the stupid joke over and over again is so that the two of them can canoodle a little bit.
I think it's bad writing.
Okay.
It's not bad acting. It's not Billy Piper's acting.
No, definitely not. She's great.
We know this.
Yeah.
All in all, I wanted to like Tooth and Claw. I love werewolves. The atmosphere is good if you ignore the monkery. And how much better would it have been if the monks had been led by the meddling monk? Wouldn't that have been a much better episode? I'm going to give this a 1.6.
Oh, you beat me to it. Well done. You beat me. Nice.
Okay. You have a question.
I have a question for you. So the alien werewolf thingy, whatever it is, let's just call it a werewolf for now. So the werewolf is, I think it's fair to say it's kind of powered by moonlight, right? Like the second that moonlight hits it, it goes from, for some reason, being stuck in this human body into being itself and being super strong and big and just practically unstoppable.
Correct.
How come they stop it using moonlight?
Well, Rose...
Shouldn't it just boost it?
Well, no, Rose puts her own pin in that during the episode.
Oh, really?
Because Rose asks that very question.
Oh, right. I forgot that.
And the Doctor says, well, you're 70% water, but you can still drown.
Oh, I like that. Actually, I take it back. That's a good line. That's a nice piece of writing in this episode. Well done, whoever you are, Russell T. Davis or whoever.
It was Russell.
Oh, it was? All right. Nice one, Russ. Well done. Okay, cool. Listener mini. We have a listener mini in this episode, and it comes from Alan Trussler, Gallifrey and Buccaneer, a.k.a. Gallifrey and Buccaneer. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm fine, thank you.
Oh, that's really nice to hear, Alan. Everything cool? Everything good? Did you have a nice day? Oh, really? Oh, well, that's good. I'm sure you've written a spiffing mini review. What do you say we go through it? Actually, JD and I could go through it. What do you think? Okay, cool. Alan, you don't sound at all like I thought you'd sound. Okay, so Alan writes, it's all getting a bit Russell T. Davis-y here, isn't it? His sixth consecutive story, and thankfully his last for a bit, as we get Whithouse taking over next week. How RTD managed to keep the quality this reasonably high, I have no idea.
The Christmas Invasion was essentially a Dr. Light story with a nice bombastic new Doctor ending. New Earth is the standard initial story where the enemy is easily dispatched, and the tensions rather light, just like Tom Baker's robot, Colin Baker's twin dilemma, and even Rose with Eccleston.
Tooth and Claw falls under a similar template. It's the early past adventure, normally second or third into the run of the series. Unquiet Dead, Shakespeare Code, Fires of Pompeii, all the RTD series keep to this idea. Why am I even mentioning this? Because they're never really that great. They never excel at being great Doctor Who.
I'll just put a pin in that.
Okay.
Take series two. We get a bunch of fluff at the start, and then later in the series, the heavier stuff. The Impossible Planet, the Satan Pit, and, oh, wait. Series 2 is rather bad, so it doesn't really work here. Series 3 is the best example. We get front-loaded stuff with stuff like the Shakespeare Code and Daleks in Manhattan.
Then nice one.
Later in the series, we get Blink, Human Nature, Family of Blood, and Utopia. All of the early adventures are almost always throwaway adventures, with little to no bearing on the Doctor, companions, or the series at large. It's Doctor Who by the numbers.
Tooth and Claw has Queen Victoria and a werewolf. I love werewolves. Give me a werewolf film any day. And that idea sounds great, doesn't it? Queen Vic in, obviously, Victorian-era Britain, with wood-paneled walls, candlelight and carriages, and kung fu monks? Damn it, Russell, you were doing so well!
He continues, there's a solid core to the idea of the story. that, good God, would I love it if it was pulled off by a better writer. Instead of dark and moody, we get Rose and her dog flirting like they've just discovered their respective sex organs and can't wait to try them out. Boring, stereotypical characterization of Victorian army commanders and kung fu bloody monks.
He goes on, some bits shine, that's for sure. The fabulously tense moment when the Doc and Co. look up to see the werewolf breathing in through the roof window, agreed, that is an awesome scene. The Ian Dury bit at the start, Derek Riddle as Sir Robert, and admittedly, considering the budget, the werewolf does look great. Yes, I totally agree, I said this as well, the CGI is amazing.
And he concludes that just like the Koh I Noor itself, this story could do with a few more cuts, a few more improvements, until we get the shine just right. And in conclusion, he gives Tooth and Claw a 2.3.
Nice one, Alan. Nice one.
And of course, I agree totally with Alan's kung fu monkery.
Yeah, that's a fantastic mini in general.
Yeah.
Holy
so
shit.
So if you're not Alan, you can follow him on Twitter. He is Alan Trussler. That's Alan with a U.
And an at symbol at the start. Seriously, awesome mini, nice one. A lot of those references went way over my head, but I completely trust you. Well done.
I do want to have one single comment.
You put a pin in this, dude.
Yeah, which was, he said the second or third episode of the series tend to be historical, and he's right.
Okay.
Unquiet Dead, Shakespeare Code. And then he says Fires of Pompeii is not very good. And Alan, wait until my Fires of Pompeii review. And, you know, Fires of Pompeii, Donna Noble, and Peter Capaldi.
Yeah, so I agree with half of what JD just said. Guess which half? Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for tuning into Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. What should you do with the next, let's say, 2-minute interval of your life? I've got a great suggestion. Log on to Twitter. Follow JD. He is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K. You won't regret it.
And if you are not Ponkin, and most of you aren't, you can follow him on Twitter as well. He is at Ponkin.
Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N. Ponkin.
Thanks, JD. Thanks again for listening. Rock on, catch your earballs in the next episode. Shamalama ding dong, and cha-chow.
Cha-chow.
Problemo. Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Like us on Facebook, that's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Okay, then find us on Google Plus, that's plus Who Back When, and when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's at Who Back When. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who review, New Who review, or still funny, Audio Who review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When?